This podcast contains sensitive topics such as murder, violence, and sexual abuse.
Happy. I really want to stop starting everything with like happy Mondays and stuff because it sounds.
Why? Because your day isn't happy?
What? No. Yes. A. To B, I barely ever know what day it is. And I just wish that there was like something inside of me that could come up with like a better like
intro.
Yeah.
What about what's up, freak bitches?
There we go.
Is that one taken?
Probably. But like, you know, like I see a lot of like TikTok creators who have these like catchphrases, yeah, like hello, like, beautiful people. Yeah. And I, as clever as I am,
beautiful people,
and
sounds like creepy,
a little pandering, right? You don't know if I'm beautiful.
You know who does that? Brad Mondo. Even though I don't like that he uses sulfate in his hair products, he's a great YouTuber.
I'm mad at him because during COVID, during the shutdown in 2020, I had convinced myself due to binge watching Brad Mondo that I could like give myself a fade. And I ended up having to shave my head.
And did you tag him in the video? You should have taken a video and tagged him.
No, it was so bad, Lindsay. I didn't even like shave it right either. It was really bad. But from that moment, every time I tell the story of how I had to shave my head, I always talk about how it's like Brad Mondo's fault. He instills all this like false confidence in me.
It was a motivating factor.
It was the 100% the whole factor.
He always says hello beautiful. That's what his thing is.
Yeah, but see, like that wouldn't feel authentic to me if I did that, because
it does
like,
when he says it to me though.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, my bald ass was not beautiful and I don't appreciate him making these assumptions about me.
He's like, hello you bald beautiful badass.
No, I feel like if he actually saw what I looked like, he'd be like, hello
hello.
Hi.
So what are we talking about today?
All right. So we're finally doing season two and we have come up with this like cool idea, because with the JonBenet case, don't shake your head. It's a cool idea.
It is a cool idea. And you came up with it. So
I wasn't going to take credit, but
yeah, I noticed
I feel
that.
Like everyone knows that I come up with
things. That's a personal growth thing that you almost had just now where you didn't take credit for it.
This season is just starting off really professional. We have learned from our past mistakes, but the reason I was so into talking about the JonBenet Ramsey case is because there's like 100 different theories, right? But I also realized when discussing it how much I hate documentaries that like are really biased or swayed a different way. And so when we discussed a season two, I really didn't connect to another true crime case in the same way, and I was really reluctant to do like another season long thing. So I was like, what if we did multiple parts about different crimes that have swayed the public opinion throughout the time, right? So like documentaries, podcasts, popular books, mm-hmm. things like that, that like
controversial cases,
yeah, like divided cases mm-hmm. two that people thought were pretty cut and dry and then aren't, which is our first one, which is Scott Peterson.
Oh, we're doing Scott Peterson? I'm just kidding.
Oh my God.
But hey,
the amount of rage I just felt.
You're like turning red right now, I swear.
I'm just
maybe you're just sweaty already.
I knew it. You know what? I'm going to post the screenshots of me being like, I look sweaty, don't say a word about it, I was doing yard work, and I'm gonna put this audio over it.
Hey sweaty. So anyway, to the listeners out there, we have a short list of cases that have surfaced to our radar about cases that are controversial, and if you think there's one that you are really passionate about or you find really controversial, we'd love to hear from you. You can message us on Instagram or Facebook. I don't know who really uses Facebook anymore, but
I use Facebook constantly.
Ugh, God, I'm gonna delete mine.
I literally don't know how to use Instagram. Really? It confuses me.
It's very okay. Once Facebook bought it, it's really not what it used to be.
Well, it keeps trying to get me to put filters on like everything, and like I don't have time for that. I just want to upload
InstaTalk or whatever, or TikTok or something.
TikTok?
Yeah, that
thing. When I called you old earlier, this is exactly what I meant. You are a 95-year-old woman.
One of my friends at the hospital calls me Nana. It's short for grandma.
Aren't you on that TikTok that all them kids are talking about?
I used to do that to my high school students. Like, I'd be like, okay, you can't be on your phones in class. You can't be on FaceGram or InstaSnap. Like, none of that.
Oh, my God. Wow. We are not that old to be saying stuff like that. But I do love TikTok.
I don't.
And I have, like, a pretty decent following on TikTok.
Oh, really? That's great.
Yeah, people have started calling me Zaddy, and I don't know what that means.
I don't know either, but I think it's a compliment. It's a good thing.
Oh, I don't know what that means.
I don't know. That's like, I don't know. Is this that kind of podcast? I don't know. To answer that, yes, it is that kind of podcast. And speaking of, let's just hop right into the case we've been dying to talk about. Well, mostly me, because I find this case as probably almost as compelling as the Champagne case. Because it's one of those cases where you can pretty much lean a certain way. And then there's a very passionate few that lean the opposite way, you know, like, for instance,
see, I wouldn't say it's a passionate few.
I disagree researching
this, a lot of people on TikTok, actually think he's innocent because That's of the Hulu insane. Documentary.
That's because they weren't alive yet. If they're using TikTok, they weren't alive when Lacey was murdered.
It's not, am I wrong? You might have hit that on the head. Actually,
TikTok is a plague on humanity, and it makes sense you would be
a
part of that.
A plague on humanity.
It makes sense you would be a part of that to me.
Oh, my plague on humanity. That is a very dramatic review of TikTok.
I don't know. You might be right about that.
All right. So
when I say a passionate few, there is an organization, I think it's scottpetersonisinnocent.org.com or something like that, that they're obsessed with getting his appeal and getting him broken out of jail and all that. But they actually successfully got his sentence reduced to life in prison.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What a
but
win.
They so far it looks like he's not going to be getting a new trial, but you know, those glasses wearing sweater toters who are obsessed with Scott Peterson, they got to have faith.
Yeah. I was not particularly interested in the Scott Peterson stuff, but only because it feels just like a really standard, like, dude doesn't want kids, wants to live his life, kills his wife. You know, it's like tale as old as time.
Chris Watts.
Yeah. I mean, we hear about these stories.
He's a family annihilator, technically.
I know. Yeah. And we'll get to, like, you know, we'll talk about the trial in depth, but though I will state right now that I do believe that Scott Peterson is guilty, I am an advocate that he gets a new trial.
I'm not. Okay. So here's where I'm a little bit different than you. I will say I think he's probably guilty, but again, I don't think he probably shouldn't have. I don't know if he could have been, I don't know. Should he have even been charged is really the question.
We'll talk about that because, you know, when we want to do a whole episode on the trial specifically, because I think that's where this like mix up gets to, is like when we talk about how documentaries and like podcasts and stuff like influence public opinion, the Hulu documentary does a really good job like outlining like how wild that trial was. But people walking away from the documentary, it is possible to not have a fair trial and also just be guilty as well. Right. You know?
Yeah, it's not always one or the other.
Well, let's get into it. For those who don't know about Scott Peterson, we're here to enlighten you. So we'll probably start with like a brief kind of overview of the day. What actually, you know, general, what we understand about the case.
So this murder took place in Modesto, California, which they often refer to as a small town. But like, just let everybody know that it was definitely not, I don't think it's a small town. It's bigger than where you and me grew up. And would you say we grew up in a small town? Like, we grew up in a suburb, you know?
Yeah.
Small town.
Upon further research, it sounds like the, like, neighborhood they lived in was, like, a close-knit community. So I think when people say, like, oh, it's a small town, I think they're talking about specifically, like, that suburb of the city.
Yeah, so it's the Covina Avenue
Yeah.
So just really quickly, I want to mention that Scott Peterson was married to Lacey Peterson. They met in college. They had opened a pizza parlor together. And then
they opened a pizza parlor together? I did not know that.
Yeah. And they opened like a pizza parlor in like, I wasn't sure if it was in a mall or a strip mall or something, but they ended up selling it. And then Scott, I forget what he's some kind of contracting guy.
He sells fertilizer.
Gross. And then Lacey, she was into horticulture. Mm-hmm. She had a degree from Cal Poly in horticulture, and that's where Scott and her met. And he you know, had to stay behind an extra semester and live on campus while they were dating. And actually, that's where he had one of the first affairs they're aware of, where he was seeing someone else, and Lacey was aware of it. Like, she actually, one or the other walked in on the other woman, you know.
Jesus.
And, yeah,
what a great start to that relationship.
Yeah, Scott was a serial cheater, possibly a sex addict. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but he had some serious mental issues. You can even just tell by the way he interacts with people, but I digress. So the day in question is December 24th.
Which, can I just real quick?
2002.
It's wild that the two cases that we have talked about, one is on Boxing Day, December 26th, and now this one is on December 24th.
I don't really see a coincidence there.
I just think it's weird.
It is weird. Did you call it Boxing Day?
Yeah, December 26th is Boxing Day.
Oh, what is that all about? Nah, who cares? Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. So this is not going great. I'm sorry.
I actually think it's going really well. I'll cut out all the ums. You're going to sound like it was like a perfect train of thought.
It's a perfect ominous hum.
Well, I'll sound like that. I don't really care to edit your audio that much.
You only edit out everything except when I say or I agree with you.
So it's just you being like, yeah.
Good point, Sam. Anyway, allegedly. So and let me also say, everything that happened on December 24th in the morning before Scott Peterson contacts Sharon Rocha, who is Lacey Peterson's mother, is based on Scott's word. And we have very few markers in that time period to let us know what was a finite fact that actually happened. So on the 24th, around 8 a.m., they allegedly woke up. And Lacey woke up first, and since she was very pregnant, 8.5 months or something like that, she went downstairs and immediately ate a piece of toast. Then Scott woke up after her, came downstairs, they had a bowl of cereal together. And she was watching Martha Stewart while mopping the floor, or the Martha Stewart show was on. And this is really important because it's actually brought up in the trial whether they were actually even watching Martha Stewart, because Scott was, you know, insisting that she watched the episode on Martha's meringue. And, you know, the prosecution actually kind of dropped the ball on this, because they said she doesn't even say meringue in that episode. But I believe it was the defense that brought it to their attention. They're like, actually, she does. Like,
yeah, and they played the recording of it. Mm-hmm. It was really embarrassing moment.
Yeah, it's almost like so if Lacey was the one mopping the floor, I mean, it's almost like Scott couldn't have been the one mopping the floor while Martha said meringue. Like, you know, like, you know, but whatever. So anyway,
yeah, we'll get to that.
The weird thing about her waking up to have toast and cereal and then start mopping the floor is, sorry, looking at your timeline, there's another thing. He says that she woke up and was styling her hair sitting on a bench in their bathroom. So after styling her hair, you know how us women, we like to get all pretty before we, you know, get down and dirty mopping the floors, apparently.
Did she do the hair thing before mopping? Okay.
Yeah. Well, so
it never says like she was like frivolously mopping. She could have just been like, oh, there's a stain on the floor.
She would not be frivolously mopping, considering the maids were there the day before and had just mopped. So
dun dun dun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like, why did you go style your hair, come mop the floor that was already mopped when you're about to go walk the dog, which he says she went and walked the dog. And also, she was going to come back and make gingerbread cookies. So it's like, wouldn't you mop after you made the cookies? And wouldn't you do your hair after you went and sweated your pregnant ass off walking the dog?
Okay, so let me get this straight. So they wake up. Homegirl has some toast. Scott wakes up. They throw on Martha Stewart.
They have cereal.
Oh, right. They have cereal. She starts doing her hair. Now, is she doing her hair during the Martha Stewart? Or is that unclear?
That's mopping.
Okay. So, wake up, have toast, have cereal. She starts doing her hair. Mm-hmm. And then they throw on Martha Stewart and she starts mopping the kitchen.
Right.
Before she intends to take the dog for a walk.
Yes. Okay. Now, since Lacey was super duper pregnant, she used to borrow Scott's pajama pants and wear them to bed. There were these like blue, like one color pajama pants, because that was like one of the only things that fit her. And then he said, last time I saw her, she was wearing black leggings and a white top.
Right.
That's not what she was found in. So I don't know. That's a complicated, we'll save that for later. But anyway, after she's watching Martha Stewart mopping the kitchen, Scott goes and starts loading umbrellas into his car because he wanted to take them to his warehouse. And that's important because he doesn't actually drop them off at his warehouse.
Yeah, can you explain the umbrella thing to me? Because when I was first like reading and listening and watching about whenever they bring up the umbrellas, it's not clear. Are these like rain umbrellas? Are they like patio umbrellas?
No idea.
So we don't know.
I imagine they're like big umbrellas that you wouldn't want to leave in your garage.
Okay.
Like if you have another place to put them, you can put them somewhere else.
Okay. I'll put a pin into why I asked that.
Like a beach later. Umbrella, I would guess, because like how many patio umbrellas? You need one, right?
Well, yeah, that's why. But I'm like, how many umbrellas in general? Do you need? Like, what fucking? No one seems to give a shit that it's. Right. I think it's kind of weird to just start loading inconspicuous umbrellas in your car.
Like, Sam's like, that's the most suspicious thing in the whole case.
Well, my reasoning for it is if they were patio umbrellas and they were zipped up in a bag. You know what I'm saying? Like, how
that's
do we
what they
know
say is it was under a tarp
umbrellas? You know what I mean? Anyways.
Yeah. Well, I think the advocates of Scott Peterson is innocent.org.com would have something to say about that dragging a body into a trunk at broad daylight is different than picking up a couple of umbrellas in a tarp or
obviously.
Not. They may or may not be in a tarp, you know, like. But anyway.
Yes. Anyways, I know that he sees his neighbor as he's doing this.
Yeah.
He's like, they do loading like some umbrellas.
The friendly like neighbor wave where you're like, hey, don't talk to me, but like we live next to each other kind of thing.
Yeah.
That I do with my neighbors. So that's around 9:20. And then now we don't know what happens after that. We don't even know if any of this has ever happened. I personally don't think any of it did. But more than likely, I don't know. The thing I don't agree with them saying Lacey went and walked her dog is Lacey had not been walking her dog for months, according to her mother and close friends, because she like passed out in the park two different times. This is actually a week after he met Amber Fry, or like a week after he met Sean, Amber's friend. Lacey had these episodes where she'd get like really hypotensive and like pass out in the park. And she went to a doctor and they're like, well, stop walking the dog in the park. Like, so she hadn't been doing that. And she was like, she was very, very pregnant. Like she wasn't really going on these like kind of long strolls like that anyway, just based on her condition, but also that the path she would take into the park was slick and muddy. So it's like, why wouldn't she waddle her, you know, self all the way? She could slip. She could get really hurt.
Well, and especially if she's already passed out twice. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it finally registered to a lot of them. They're like, wait, why was she walking the dog? She hadn't done that in a long time.
Yeah.
So around, if we go back to Scott, what we know Scott was doing, here's another little, we know the neighbor saw him around 9:20 when he was loading the quote umbrellas or unquote, whatever. And then at 10:30 to 10:56, Scott is actually at his warehouse on the computer looking up tools. So around 10:18, and I don't know how they know it's specifically 10:18 because people didn't have Apple Watches back then. Not everyone's walking around their neighborhood with their cell phone. But at 10:18, Lacey's dog, Mackenzie, was walking around with her leash on, and one of the neighbors found him and put him in the backyard.
There is a reason they know that was 10:18, and that's because the neighbor... excuse me, the neighbor who found the dog on the leash had receipts that morning because she had put gas in her car and then went directly home. And as she was pulling into her driveway, she noticed the dog. And the time on the receipt was like 10:15 or something, and it was a 3-minute drive. So that's why it's time stamped so specifically as 10:18.
So it's still approximation.
Yeah. Well, it's always, yeah, these things are always going to be so approximate.
I'm going to keep like correcting all these timeline things, but I'm sure we'll go over them at some point. So I'm just going to read through the rest of the timeline.
Yeah.
So 12:54, Scott has a receipt from the marina where he went fishing on his secret boat. And then at 2:15 PM, he calls Lacey, leaving her a voicemail. I think he tells her he's not going to be able to pick up Pop Pop's basket. Pop, pop. And yeah, 4:30 PM, he drops the boat off at the warehouse, returning home, sees Mackenzie in the backyard with the leash on, takes the leash off. The house is unlocked. He actually came into the house, took his clothes off, and threw them in the washer because they were dirty, stinky fishing clothes, which people think is suspicious. I actually don't find that suspicious.
Yeah, I don't think that's weird.
And then he ate a piece of pizza with milk and walked naked upstairs to the shower. This, honestly, this guy is, he reminds me so much of my ex-boyfriend. It's not even funny. Like, it's not even funny. But anyway, at 5:17, he's kind of like, where's my wife? She was supposed to, you know, go bake gingerbread cookies. And then we were going to make plans to go, well, they had plans to go to Lacey's mom's house or something. And they were going to leave together to the mom's house, but he hadn't seen Lacey. And he's like, oh, I'm running late. Maybe that's why. Maybe she's already over there. So he calls Sharon Rocha and it's like, hey, he actually said Lacey's missing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He goes, she's like, hi, this is Sharon, whatever they say back in the, you know, 2000s. And he's like, Lacey's missing. And she's like, what do you mean? And he's like, is she over there with you? She's not home. Right. Or he might've said, you know, is Lacey there? And then she's like, you know, Lacey's missing. That was like the big phrase that like really freaked her out. She's like, what do you mean she's missing if you haven't seen her for a couple hours? Like, so then he goes and he spends like, she's like, we'll call some of her friends. So he spends like a couple minutes calling her friends. Like all just, he called like three people, and then he's calls Sharon back and he's like, she's not at their house. And she's like, okay, well maybe if her car's there, maybe she went to the neighbors to deliver cookies or something, like go check with the neighbors, like go to a couple houses. And he did. And he calls back. He's like, she's not there. I'm going to go look in the park because I found Mackenzie in the backyard with his leash on. Now, what's interesting about that is like a couple months down the road, he tells Sharon that she told him, you know, did Mackenzie have his leash on or something like that? Like he tries to like make it like she provided that information.
Right.
It's super weird. And that same day, he also says that last time he saw Lacey, she was mopping the floor.
Yeah, I know has definitely changed, like,
yeah, actually, what he last maybe saw I got her doing it. The timeline wrong about when she was curling her hair then.
Well, even if you did, I wouldn't blame you, because even like the documentary and some of the stuff I read, it seems pretty unclear when the like hair stuff happened, because in his initial interview with police, he only mentions mopping the floor, but then later talks about curling the hair. So like, I think it's kind of a general unclear. So all we know is that like she allegedly curled her hair and mopped the floor that morning.
She actually wasn't curling her hair. She was flipping it out. But
oh, I don't fucking know. I don't. She put something hot close to her hair or on her hair and it did something else. I don't know.
Yes. So this is now that Scott has, you know, checked with the neighbors. He calls Sharon back and he's like, I'm going to go look in the park because I found the dog with the leash on and all that. So Sharon's like, I'll meet you there. She tells Ron, which is Sharon's husband and Lacey's stepdad, who was like very close with Lacey. It was like, he was around through like most of her childhood from what I understand. And so he actually calls the police at 5:47 and is like, you know, Lacey's missing. We can't find her. She's very pregnant. Like this is a, you know, really big deal. And, people find it suspicious that Scott didn't call 911. I actually don't, because I don't know if he told them to, or I think he was like, we need to call the police or something, or maybe he didn't, but I'm just saying he was going to the park to find her. And you know, they were handling that. So I don't find that that
suspicious. Yeah, people don't usually like rush to call the police. Like they want to check like all avenues first. So like, I don't think that's weird. I probably would be calling people, looking around first, because you don't want to call the police and then find out that like, oh, she was just at the neighbor's house, like watching more Martha Stewart. That's fucking embarrassing, right? Like mopping their floors, or at the Ramsey house with the victim advocates mopping their floors.
Where we get out of the like what Scott said happened and then things that actually happened. So Sharon Rocha rushed over to the park. Scott took Mackenzie with him to the park. Sharon got there and she was running around screaming Lacey, Lacey, Lacey at the top of her lungs. She says there's like no one in the park because it's Christmas Eve. No one's there. She runs into this one guy. He's like going for like a jog. And she's like, have you seen my daughter? Like, she's like freaking out. And he's like, no, I'm sorry. And she's like, oh my God, my daughter's missing. And she's like, kind of, you know, starting to get hysterical. And he's like, well, I'm a cardiologist and I have a, like a pager where I can like find where everyone is. Like if they're in a hospital, I can find out where they're at. So what's her name? Okay. They look for her name. And then he's like, okay. And she's a pregnant brunette between this age. Okay. So they look for that. And they're like, there's nobody admitted to the hospital with this description or name. Right. So that was actually really helpful because it's like, oh, did something happen to her? And it's like, probably not. Like,
right. Like, did she pass out and someone like called 911? Like, right. Yeah, definitely check hospitals. Yeah.
Right. So the police get to the house after the call. I don't know how long it took, but it's probably around 6 p.m. And they go through the house. There's no sign of a crime scene. There's, you know, no blood, no signs of a struggle. If you had murdered your wife, why would you leave signs of struggle or anything? Like, obviously. But anyway, the most important thing to take away from that is there's no crime scene. To this day, we don't know where the crime scene was.
What I find really irritating about this part in the timeline is that there's some discrepancy between the police officers about whether or not the house smelled like bleach, whereas like some officers were like, it reeked of bleach, like therefore implying that if there was a crime scene, it's possible it was cleaned up. Whereas other officers claimed that it didn't smell like bleach. But me, the like most famous armchair detective of all time, was like, wouldn't it no matter what smell like cleaning supplies? Because Scott said she mopped the floor. So like, to smell when like cleaning?
When he came home, he saw that the mop and the bucket were on the floor. Like it had been mopped. So he took it and dumped it out in the sink, which would explain why his fingerprints would be on the mop and the bucket.
Stand that shit.
I know. Yeah. Oh,
cannot stand that stuff, man.
Yeah. So I forgot to mention that. And then he like took all his clothes off and walked around naked eating pizza and milk like a freak.
Okay. That also like really offends me. Why are you drinking milk with pizza?
I don't hate on that.
I hate on it. That's disgusting to me. That's weird. Some people
don't like milk in general though.
Okay. It's like 5 o'clock in the evening at this
point.
How do
you say milk? How do you say it?
Milk.
Milk. Okay. A lot of people from our area say milk.
I know. I used to say milk when I was a kid. Yeah.
It's weird. I say pillow.
Michigander.
Yeah. I looked it up. It's actually specific to the area we're from.
That's weird.
Yeah. It's like, really, it's like a really specific niche.
Okay. So if you don't mind, I would like to summarize a little bit only because I don't know the case very well. And so I want to make sure I understand. So she goes for a walk with the dog. He goes to his warehouse to like jack off to tools online or something like that. And then a neighbor finds the dog on the leash rolling around around 10:18. Neighbor puts the dog in the backyard, goes and continues on like vibing with their day. Scott leaves the warehouse with the boat that he has at the warehouse. Puts it into the marina.
Goes, oh, yeah. I missed like this entire part. Yeah.
Goes fishing.
Catches no fish.
Catches no fish. No new pictures for his dating profiles of him holding fish.
Ugh.
So he leaves the marina, calls her on the way home, leaves a voicemail.
Hey, beautiful. I just left a message at home. 2:15. I live in Berkeley. I won't be able to get to Villa Farms to get that basket for Papa. I was hoping you would get this message and go on out there. I'll see you in a bit, sweetie. Love you. Bye.
End of message.
Leaves a voicemail, gets home, dog is in the backyard with the leash on. He goes in, strips naked like I always do when I come home, puts all his clothes in the washer, which
Honey,
I also
I'm
do.
Home.
Yeah. Takes pizza out of the fridge with a nice hearty glass of milk, starts like taking a shower, and then he gets out of the shower and he's like, oh shit, where the fuck is my wife? And then calls her mom and her stepdad. They all are like, do X, Y, and Z. They go to the park. Stepdad calls the police.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I feel like we've gone over the timeline like 7 times, and every time we find something that I forgot to mention.
I mean, that's okay.
So the reason we know that Scott actually went to the marina and he's not just like making it up is because he has a boat launch ticket. Now, one thing I didn't understand, because I don't fish. I don't own a secret boat. So I was like, not sure. Do you have to have a launch ticket to launch?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I have gone fishing many times, and I've gone fishing in a boat. I've never had to have a launch ticket in general, but fishing laws per state are all different.
Yeah. I personally live in the state of chaos.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
Okay, so we started right on the day she was missing and right on the crime. But if I just back up to like the day before, the last person besides Scott Peterson to see Lacey alive was her half sister. Her name's escaped me right now, but she only comes in the story this one time. So basically, she's a hairstylist, or she cuts hair. And Scott and Lacey came to her salon so Scott could get a haircut for the holidays and all that. And Lacey was wearing, I'm looking up the word cream because I said she was wearing a cream colored maternity suit thing, but apparently I use the word cream a lot. Apparently, because I had like 7 people ahead of you.
Okay, and a testimony, the owner of the day spa where Lacey Peterson had an appointment around noon on December 23rd recounted that the pregnant woman was wearing black pants and a white long-sleeved shirt.
Yes, now I've got a little bit more specifics on that. It was a khaki maternity suit, but I think I had something more specific, like it was like a black jacket, khaki pants, and a white blouse, I think it was. Something like that.
Yeah.
But that's really specific because remember we said Lacey was found wearing black leggings and like a sweatshirt of a miscellaneous color.
Right.
Personally, I think she was probably not wearing anything when she was dumped in the water. Unless he shot her like at the water, somehow convinced her to get on a boat with him. But yeah, kind of doubt that. There's no blood on the boat. So yep. That's another thing too, is like if you're throwing a corpse overboard, you'd think he'd, but unless he strangled her anyway. So while at the salon, that's where he sees the sister teaching Lacey how to flip her hair out after she cuts Scott's hair, and then Scott invites her to go have pizza at their house, but she already had plans with a friend, so she went off and did that. Lacey and Scott allegedly had pizza and watched Monday Night Football, which sounds like probably the worst thing you could possibly do.
Probably drink some milk with it too. Ugh, gallon of milk, big old pizza, football. Yeah.
Got one of those beer hats, but it's just 2 gallons of milk.
The American dream right there.
Yeah. So then he said she put on the blue pajama pants and went to sleep. Funny thing about the blue pajama pants, they were actually found stuffed in a plastic bag with other items from the house in Scott's car when he was on the run, when the bodies were found. In case you were wondering where those pants were.
This man just sounds like incredibly innocent.
I
just like don't know why they crucified him the way they
did. We really should do a whole episode where we answer, because you and I, like, we know a little bit about this case. Like, I think you know a lot more about JonBenet than I do about this. And I feel like I barely know anything about JonBenet, even though we did a whole podcast on it. And plus no answers have been answered. Like, we don't know anything that happened. Same with this case though, except for the fact that like we have a conviction. I think most people think he's guilty, but
I think you'd be surprised.
Well, and most importantly, a jury of his peers thought he was guilty. So
we'll get to that.
Oh, God. Yeah. So yeah, they were at the salon. Scott was getting a haircut, and that's when the sister was like, oh, I have this custom fruit basket from this farmer's market. And Scott's like, oh, since I'm going to be golfing tomorrow. I can go pick up that basket. It's like right by there. And then remember the next day, what did he actually go do? He went fishing. So he had to call and say, hey, I can't get Pop-Pop's basket. Sorry about that. You know, Grandpa's going to have to skip the fruit for the holidays. Like, he didn't say that, but that's what I would have said.
So before we started recording, I looked up the 911 call because I like to play them, you know, on the podcast and everything. There's not an audio one, but I found the transcript. And something that stuck out to me is that Ron Gransky, the stepdad, said, this is a direct quote from the transcript. We just had a call from our son-in-law that he left this morning at 9:30 to play golf. He came home and she was nowhere to be found.
Yeah, that is super weird. He actually told multiple people he was going to go play golf. I don't know why, like, if he did do it, why did he decide to tell everyone he went fishing when he could have just been like, oh yeah, I went to play golf. Maybe he realized he's not going to be able to have a proof of the golfing or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say it might be because he had a launch ticket. So there's like a trail to the marina.
But why would you leave a trail to the place where the bodies are? Like, that's kind of stupid. Like, that's really stupid.
I honestly think, so for me, with this case specifically, like, there's a lot of hints that Scott is a narcissist, and narcissists tend to think that they can get away with anything. And so, like, so for those listening, yeah, like, the, like, spoiler alert, her body ends up being found in the marina where he took the boat out. The body wasn't found where he took the boat out, but in that general
proximity.
So what I think happened is I think he tried to set himself up with an alibi by making sure everyone knew he was going golfing. And then when he got to the marina, he needed a boat launch ticket. And like, now he has a paper trail. So he switched up to be like, yep, went fishing, because he probably assumed that you might as well just say that so that nobody can catch you in a lie, because it'll be worse if, yeah, you know, he tells everyone he's golfing and then they're like, well, then how come this boat launch, you know, has you here at this time, you know?
The other thing that's really weird about him saying he was golfing is the fact that he had a boat and nobody knew about this boat. He paid for it in cash. It was unregistered. He actually started looking for it the day after he told his mistress, Amber Fry, or the day of that he told his mistress, Amber Fry, that this was his first Christmas without his wife. That's when he started looking for the secret boat. Then a week later, he bought it in cash. They don't think Lacey had any clue about this boat. And then this is why it's really weird, is because Ron was actually a huge fisherman. Like, he would stop home on the way home from work and fish for like 20 minutes. Like, it wasn't unusual that he also went fishing on Christmas Eve, because people are like, oh, it's so weird he went fishing. And people are like, no, it's not. Ron went fishing. It's like, Ron went fishing almost every day. It would be extremely weird for Scott to go fishing on Christmas Eve, because nobody knew he had a boat. He didn't even have his fishing poles. Ron did. That's how infrequently he went, is that Ron had his fishing pole. So he had to go buy one, and then he had to go buy tackle. And apparently he bought like the wrong kind of tackle. People always like to argue about this. I'm like, you're just arguing about like nonsense. Like, that's it doesn't matter if he bought the right tackle, the wrong tackle. He could have bought the wrong tackle, just not knowing which tackle he was supposed to use and actually been fishing. Like, just because he bought the wrong tackle doesn't mean he's, you know, murdered his pregnant wife and dumped her in the water.
Right.
You know, we have other things that lead to that conclusion. Yeah. So that's what was unusual about him saying he was golfing. Apparently he told Amber Fry that he was like hunting wabbits in May, like Elmer Fudd in Maine, in Maine. Yeah.
He also said he was in Europe at one point, but I feel like we'll get more into the Amber Fry portion of this.
I read her book too. It was disturbing. I mean, it was fine, but it was like, he's just such a slimy man.
I know. And like, so after December 24th, the police are now on the scene and they go back to the police station and interview Scott Peterson. And that's how you get this timeline of events, is like through this interview. I think the interview only lasted an hour at first.
Yeah, I know that he went home after a couple hours and Sharon and Ron and Lacey, I think Lacey's brother and whoever else was like looking for her so far, were all at Sharon's house and they were waiting for Scott to call so they could all be together and like talk and like figure stuff out. He went home and went to fucking sleep.
Well, he was tired. He had a full tummy.
Would you be able to sleep if your freaking pregnant wife was missing?
Absolutely not. But also, again, okay, so the thing that's hard about this case for me is, like, behavioral stuff can't really, like, be evidence of anything because, like, unfortunately, there's no, I mean, the first thing you learn in psychology is that everyone handles situations and emotions very differently. So, like, it is possible that maybe he was like, I'm just going to go home. I'm overwhelmed by everything. Like, I need to go to bed. But the next day, so Christmas Day, the media frenzy, like, begins, like, pretty much immediately. And
why is that?
Okay, why is that, though? Because even when I was younger and the news took off about this, I was like, it's just some dude who killed his wife again. Like, but...
It's because the media circuit was slow because of the holidays and the 24-hour news going on.
It's literally, yeah, it's the same reason the JonBenet
exactly
like took off the way it did, is that winter is the slowest season, especially near the holidays, and this is, you know, a missing person, so it's like even more exciting or whatever. But of course, it always goes back to that 24-hour news coverage, and they are constantly looking for the next O.J. Simpson trial.
So on Christmas Day, Scott calls his father and complains the cops were grilling him. The night before, they had asked him if he wanted to take a polygraph, and he said yes. But here in the notes, it says his father told him not to take one. Actually, that might be true, but he told his mother the police said it would be a bad idea for him to take one because he's so emotional.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he, I mean, he just, that's makes not this how like
lie detectors work. You can be as emotional as you want, they'll cover a baseline.
And you'll find his, well, that's not true. Like, some people can, like, it'll be inconclusive if they're way too emotional sometimes. But anyway, Jackie Peterson, I don't know what her fucking last name is. I don't know if she's also Peterson, I would assume so. But she's his mother. She's very frail and sick. She's got like severe COPD and she's on oxygen. She's just like him in a lot of ways, like the way she cares about appearances and she's always lying and making crap up as she goes. She tortures Lacey's mother through the whole trial. It's despicable.
I know.
And I hope she's, you know, having a nice time in hell. So any comments on that?
No. Sorry, I was reading my like really beautiful expert notes. Okay, so then Boxing Day, which is December 26th, and now the investigation has like really started, and like the media is camped outside of Scott's house. Scott is doing that thing that like everyone in these situations do when he's like, oh, everything's not fair. Like, why are they focusing on me? Like, you know, doing that whole thing. And the police were like, hey, we need to like look through your house. And Scott says no. And so the police had to like go get a warrant.
I think they had a warrant already. And they asked
Okay. So that makes more sense. Yeah.
And they didn't find anything. There was nothing to find.
Yeah, they found nothing interesting. We say that they didn't find anything, but a lot of times with these cases, when you live with the person who was murdered, it's really hard to differentiate between like, should this, you know, drop of blood be over here, or should this hair be over here? Because all of it's pretty inconclusive because they live together. So like naturally their DNA is going to be everywhere. So what they really were looking for was any kind of murder weapon and any kind of sign of struggle, which there was not.
Yeah, that really calls into question, where was she murdered? If he murdered her, was she murdered at home? Did he strangle her? They think that he smothered her with a pillow while she was sleeping, which, I mean,
imagine, I don't know. You would see skin cells on the pillow though, right? Well, I guess it doesn't really matter.
Thought, I don't know. I mean, well, the thing is, it's like sometimes people get like really nasty when they're being strangled. Like they might froth or puke or something too. So like, I don't know. It's not always like a clean, you know, situation. But I think because he mopped the floor, that makes me think he strangled her in the kitchen. And in case there was any evidence, he mopped it.
Yeah.
That's what I think happened, because why mop the floor again? Like that's strange.
I have a few different theories, but December 27th, they have a news conference. And this is when, I think this is when the narrative of this case starts to get a little bit more prevalent, because Lacey's family gets up and they're doing that whole, like, if you have her, please return her. And they're all hysterical. Like inconsolable. Yeah. And people, I think a lot, especially Nancy Grace, we'll get to Nancy Grace. She plays a big part in this, I feel like. And her coverage of it. But a lot of people were like, man, like Lacey's family is like inconsolable. And Scott's just like walking around like it doesn't matter.
With a smirk.
Yeah. And so people started to get like really, I feel like it got really more focused on like Scott than it did Lacey. Because it kind of felt like the narrative at this point, like when this news conference happened, changed from like, let's find this like missing person to like, putting up a lens really close to Scott and seeing how he reacts to everything.
Yeah, they used to just follow him around.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
like, here he is at the gas station. Here he is taking out the trash. Like, they literally would just film him doing shit all day.
Yeah. And I mean, like, obviously, you know, that stuff is strange. It reminds me a lot of Gone Girl and how the main character in Gone Girl, like, had that similar thing. Like, his wife is missing and he's just, like, chilling. But then, of course, like with the news coverage comes like those conspiracies, right? People are like, oh, there was this like missing student from the same college that like Scott Peterson went to. Like,
while he went there. Yeah.
Did he murder her? You know, and like, stupid. You know, shit like that starts to come up, obviously.
So while they were searching the park, when Sharon got there and after she talked to the cardiologist, she saw Scott with the dog. And she's like, he's just like cruising. Like he's not looking. He's not yelling anyone's. He's not yelling, Lacey, where are you, Lacey? He's not doing anything, but he's just like cruising with the dog. And she sees him and she's like, Scott. And he's like, just like ignoring her. She like thought he was ignoring her. I think he just didn't hear her, because he just seems like he eats pizza naked walking up the stairs. He seems like an idiot. Like, if I can be honest. Like,
okay. I've done that 4 times today. So like,
I rest my case. Oh. Anyway, I'm kidding.
Like, come on, Mackenzie, go potty. Go potty. Yeah, come on.
Yeah. She's like talking to like people, like, cause she cares about finding her daughter. And he just cares about like, oh yeah, I'm at the park looking for her. She catches up with them, and they're like, apparently like a bunch of people came together to search the park with the police. And she said Scott wasn't looking. Like, she said Scott had a flashlight. He didn't even have it on. He wasn't like flashing it around. She said he wasn't looking for anyone. He refused to talk to Sharon. And she said this, him refusing to talk to her thing, went on for months. Like, anytime they were together after like a media appearance or like a press conference or whatever, like, he would avoid the piss out of her because he did not want to talk to her.
Oh my God. I think after the news conference, the next big event in this case, what happened on New Year's when they did the candlelight vigil. And so like, I have different thoughts about this. So like, the first weird thing that people noticed was that he didn't say anything. Like, he didn't make a speech or like anything like that. And then like, of course, media coverage, people got pictures of him smiling and like laughing and stuff like that.
Yeah, they said the smiling photos, he was talking to his niece and nephew or something, and he was just trying to be like cheerful. So they just happened. It's just, there's so many things like it makes me mad. How many things do we have to say? Well, you know, like, it could be this, like, there's so many things that it's like, Scott is like the most unlucky person on the planet. Like, it's like a video game designed to just fuck him over, this whole situation. I mean, it makes no sense. It's like, oh, he just happened to lie about where he's going. Oh, he just happened to not appear in the media. Oh, he just happened to be smiling at the, it's like this non-stop.
I know.
Non-stop.
Like, yeah, this constant like victimization for sure.
Yeah. Like, he's the real victim. And he like, oh my God, he makes me sick. He's probably a sociopath. Like,
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he probably is. I mean, if you look at the way he interacts, and he had a weird upbringing. Like, his mother had like 4 children and gave 3 of them up for adoption, which...
What?
Yeah. And by the 4th one, the doctor told her, he's like, maybe you should stop having kids and giving them up for adoption.
Oh my God. So did she keep Scott?
He kept just Scott.
Wow. There was a 25% chance that she would end up with the shitty kid. And she did anyway. Can you, imagine like that?
She doesn't see it that way. He's the perfect one. He's her golden boy. And he went fishing just like Ron did. That's what she said to Sharon Rocha during the trial. He went fishing just like you did. She said to Ron, I think. But she's Jackie. She's sick. She's got problems.
I guess so, man.
I mean, clearly. Jesus
Christ.
I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, if giving a kid up for adoption is the right choice for you, that's good. But if you're
three
gonna give up,
times.
But it wasn't like three, like all at once or year after year. It was like periods of time had passed, like a couple years, 4 years, 5 years. I don't know exact timeline, but all the other kids pretty much think Scott was guilty.
Including
the half sister he stayed with. She was talking about how he used to go. She lived closer to the marina, and she said he used to go and like go over to the marina and like stare out at it and stuff. Like she was convinced he was guilty, and she was really pissed that she extended help to him. But anyway,
that is wild.
Yeah, he had a weird upbringing. He was like the perfect son to them. Like, and he was like, he had this really contagious smile.
See, that's okay. The smile thing. And that is to me why I was trying to like originally avoid talking about this case, especially doing like a season long thing, is that if you recall, when we talked about the JonBenet Ramsey stuff, I talked about like what I viewed as a kid, you know, with the adults around me. But with the Scott Peterson trial, like one of the big things I noticed all the time was like these like weird lonely housewives being like, but he's so good looking. Like, I just remember that fucking constantly.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I could pick someone to strangle me, I guess I'd want them to be good looking. I guess that matters.
Murder. Like, and I think that's disgusting. Why this like case has always given me a bad taste in my mouth is because like that weird, like suburban, like mom thing of being like, but he's so handsome. Oh, he's just a peach.
That's what his mother was like his whole life.
I know. It really freaks me out.
Yeah. I think I dislike her more than I dislike Scott, to be honest. The more I heard about her in Sharon's book, which I just finished it for the second time today. So I'm like fresh on it. But anyway, Scott was like the golden boy that could do no wrong. And he basically got married and settled down because his mom kept pressuring him to have grandkids.
Yeah.
So, and he didn't want kids. And when Lacey was pregnant, when they were trying, he told one of her relatives, he's like, yeah, I'm kind of hoping we're infertile.
Oh my God.
Yeah. While they were trying. Like, yeah. I'm kind of hoping for infertility. And it's like, why aren't you trying to have a child? And then he never would feel the baby kick. Like Lacey would be like, oh, the baby's kicking, come feel it. And he'd put his hand and he'd be like, I don't feel anything. And then he'd pull his hand away. Like he would never.
Then he kicks her real quick.
Yeah, I feel bad for her because she basically fell in love with like, you know, someone who basically love bombed her. And
yeah,
like, she thought he was like so handsome and such a catch. And he really was just a sicko.
Yeah.
Like, he really didn't have to kill her. He could have just like ran the hell away.
Okay. I guess that would ruin the perfect image, right? Like,
that's true. Cause what about his mom and my grandson?
Yeah. Put him up for adoption like your mama did.
Damn, she's a hot mess. She's got problems.
Okay, so we covered pretty much the timeline of like the main event. And
dead. Sorry, I keep saying she's got problems. She's dead.
Oh, okay. The mom, I assume you're talking
about. Yeah, when I say she's got problems, referring to Jackie, she's dead. So she has no problems anymore.
I was going to make a really distasteful joke, but...
Okay, leave that to me.
Yeah, exactly. I'll let you do all that stuff. All right, so we got off topic, but let's go back to the vigil for a second. So after the candlelight vigil, the next, like, big thing that happens, especially on a media front, is the police call a press conference, and it's funny because all these reporters who have been like covering everything about the Lacey Peterson stuff were really confused on what the press conference could be about. Like, they didn't have any leaks or anything, like no knowledge of what it could be about. And the police come out with this woman, this like blonde woman, she's very beautiful, and announced to the world that Scott Peterson had a mistress. So let's back up now to 5 weeks beforehand when we are first introduced to Amber Fry.
So Amber and Scott met because Scott was at a conference and he met a woman named Shawn Sibley. And this is kind of like a famous story. If you know the Scott Peterson's case, you know this specific story where he was filling out the little, "Hi, my name is" tags. And he saw Shawn and he took this as an opportunity to hit on her. And he was like, he's like, "I'm here to pick up women. What should I write on mine? How's horny bastard?" And she thought that was, you know,
immediately kind of funny. No. I would be like, you freak me out.
Right. She goes, "Oh, if you're trying to meet women, here's what you write." And she wrote, "I'm rich."
Oh, okay. That's funny. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. And then apparently they talked and they really hit it off, but she had a boyfriend or she wasn't interested for whatever reason. I couldn't imagine any reason she wouldn't be interested, but, she's like, you know, I think he told her he was looking to settle down or maybe not, like he was looking for a girlfriend. I don't know what he told her, but she said, "My friend Amber is really sweet. She's looking for like a long-term relationship. So only call her if you're looking for something serious. But I think you guys would really hit it off." And the sad part is she was super right. Like, they totally hit it off. Their first date, he picked her up and he was like, "Oh, I have to run by my hotel to shower because I was traveling." I don't know when they ended up going out. I can't remember because I don't really care. Like, right. I found Amber Fry really interesting when I first found out this case. And then she's kind of, you know.
Well, because they didn't sweet, obviously see each other for long.
Yeah, it's been a couple months. So their first date, he like takes her back to his hotel and it's like all set up with like champagne and flowers. I bet you that's his move, you know?
Yeah.
So then instead of going out to dinner, I think they either had sex or they went to dinner and came back and had sex. But she was totally smitten with him and she was worried he wouldn't be, you know, like a long-term thing because, you know, he's kind of came out of nowhere like that. But eventually they ended up like, you know, she left her child alone with him a couple times. Like, they were like really seriously dating. And like, in hindsight, she was like, "I cannot believe I left my fucking kid alone with this guy."
Right.
But yeah, she was taking it really serious and they'd been dating for months by like this. And the problem is like, it'd be cute if that they're hitting it off and all, except for that he's married and his wife's like, you know, about to burst. She's so pregnant.
Well, and you know, during this time, he started to seem distant or something. And she was like, "What's wrong?" And he was like, "I got to be honest with you. Like, I'm a widow. And like, this is my first
widower."
Yeah. Is that what it is?
Yeah. They call male widows widowers. It makes no sense.
Does it? Yeah. It's just adding an ER. No sense. Okay. Either way, he's a widower and this is his first holiday without his wife.
I think I know why they call it a widower.
Why?
So a widow is an unmarried woman, uh-huh, and a widower makes the woman unmarried, even if she's the dead one.
Well, a widow is not an unmarried woman. A
woman who's unmarried because her husband died.
Oh, I right? see what you're saying. You so yeah. He made people, he made himself a widower or a widow. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying he made her a widow. So he's a widower because she's no longer married because of death.
I think
it's a word. I'm not talking about Scott. I'm talking about the word.
No, I know it's a complicated joke, but I got you.
It wasn't a joke. I'm telling you, that's where I think the word comes from. Because a widow is a woman who's unmarried because she died. Wait, no.
No, it's a woman whose husband died.
Right. Sorry, that's what I meant. I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore. So, okay, it's a woman who's unmarried because her husband died. So she's a widow. But a widower, his wife is dead. So now she's not married because she's dead. So he's a widower because she's a widow.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I think that's where the word
comes from. I see what you're saying now. Okay. That the semantics of it are ridiculous.
You can cut that out. I didn't think that was that important.
I mean, we'll see. I never know what I'm gonna cut or what I'm not gonna cut until I hear.
So he tells her, "I'm a widower."
Yeah, a widower.
So
it reminds me of. Anyways,
a widower, a widower.
Yeah, that's that one. Yes.
So
widower to bed. Right, sorry.
So he tells her, "I'm a widower." Maybe not that exact word. You know, he actually said, he said, "This is my first," he said, "I lost my wife and this is my first Christmas without her." Now you might say, what's so weird about that? Well, he didn't lose his wife yet. She was still alive. She was unaware that he had lost his wife.
Maybe he meant like in Target.
No,
he was didn't. Like, what, maybe he was like, gotta be honest, went to Target with my wife. Never lost found her. Just lost her. Like,
well, she was really pissed when she confronts him later on. She's like, "Why did you tell me you lost your wife?" He's like, "There's different kinds of loss, Amber." So I hate about
right, but she liars. Still wasn't missing yet, you know.
No, he meant like I lost her emotionally. We weren't connecting anymore.
My God,
yeah, right. He's an idiot. I know. He besides being in prison, he deserves to be kicked in the balls. Like,
yeah, oh for sure. So I feel like
sorry. So the reason why he even told her was because Sean Sibley was called by one of her friends who, and they were talking and she's talking about Scott Peterson. And he's like, "Wait, the fertilizer salesman?" And she's like, "Yeah, my friend's dating him," and blah, blah, blah. He's like, "That's unlikely considering he's married." And there, she's like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Yeah, he's like super married." So she asks Scott, like, when he, the day December 6th, when he's helping Amber pick out a Christmas tree, I believe Sean calls Scott and she's like, "Why are you freaking married dating my friend? Like, what the hell?" And he's like, "Actually, my wife died." Like, he didn't say my wife died. He said, "I lost my wife." Right. Like, that's
right,
his line.
Right.
And then that, the next day, December 7th, he goes home, searches the classifieds for a small boat. December 8th, looks up the currents in San Francisco Bay. December 9th, purchases a boat. In cash, unregistered, $1,400. And I don't know the date that he told Amber that he had lost his wife, but it was well before he actually lost his wife.
It almost sounds like he was just trying to make his lie, like, come true. You know what I mean? Like, he said a lie and then was like, "Oh, shit, like, now I have to, like, kill
honestly,
my wife."
Honestly, Sam, much like the other problems that Scott has had, there's a perfectly plausible explanation. He's... You know, like, for example, when he, you know, was lying about the lie detector test or anything that he does, there's a perfectly logical explanation that he just happened to say he lost his wife. Like, he just happened to say that. He's just very unlucky.
Yeah. I mean, very, yeah, crazy unlucky.
It's wow. Almost like he didn't have a plan to lose his wife, right?
Wild.
He's such a piece of shit.
I feel like, so... Now that we know, like, now the world knows because the police bring Amber Fry out in a very mic drop moment, by the way. Like, I have watched this and, like, they come barreling out and there's this, like, unknown woman who just, like, fucking mic drops on everyone and then, like, leaves.
Earlier this week, the Modesto Police Department was made aware of an article that was to appear in the National Enquirer revealing new information regarding Lacey's case. Out of respect for the family, the police department felt they should provide the information to them directly so they wouldn't have to read it in the media. At that time, the family members were shown very recent pictures of Scott and a girlfriend.
Okay, first of all, I met Scott Peterson November 20th, 2002. Scott told me he was not married. We did have a romantic relationship. I am very sorry for Lacey's family and the pain that this has caused them. And I pray for her safe return as well.
Amber Fry had contacted Modesto Police Department on Monday, December 30th, 2002. She met with detectives and gave information about the relationship with Scott Peterson. And Amber Fry has been eliminated as a suspect in Lacey Peterson's disappearance.
But what the media doesn't know is that Amber Fry, when she had basically found out because of the fucking horrible, like, crazy media coverage that is happening, she contacts the police and is like, I'm his mistress. And the police ended up keeping that like an airtight secret so that she could record her phone calls with Scott, which I truly believe that that was like a mark of genius and created that like ace in the hole that they needed.
I guess he doesn't really reveal anything incriminating to her. He does at one point basically confess to murder and say, she keeps asking him, like, did you do it? Is Lacey in Marina? Did you kill her on Christmas Eve? Like, she keeps asking him all these questions and he just like, he's like, I can't. He's like, no, I didn't do that. You know me, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, it gets to the point where he's like, I can't really talk about this with you. And then finally he tells her, he's like, you know, you've guessed all the answers. Like, you know, all the answers. And I wish I could tell you. And it's just going to take time before I can talk to you about this stuff.
Well, and there's also the added, so when the world finds out that these conversations have been recorded, this is what I think was like the ace in the hole for the defense attorneys, or I'm sorry, the prosecutors. Mm-hmm. And that's because they had Amber Fry pretend that nothing was wrong and keep talking to him. And we got to hear from Scott during things like the candlelight vigil. So we talk about the candlelight vigil and how like he was being really whatever. But what people didn't know is he had called Amber while he was at the candlelight vigil and was talking about being in Paris. Mm-hmm. And the fireworks are going off by the Eiffel Tower and it's beautiful. Cause this whole time, like, she thought he was in Europe. And mm-hmm. there's all of these phone call conversations where he's lying about being in Europe, which is another like narcissistic thing to do, because the Lacey Peterson missing was like the biggest news story that week. And the idea that he thought that there was no way Amber Fry saw that is crazy to me.
I think he tested her though. He was like, oh, do you see that thing on the news? Like he like tried to see, and she's like, I don't really watch the news. And he's like,
yeah,
yes.
Like testing the waters a little bit.
Yeah. Like at one point he made a comment about like, oh yes, I like, saw this on the news. She's like, oh, I don't watch the news. He's like, thank God.
He's like, oh, you're the perfect person for me. Yeah. It's just not a sustainable lie, you know, but we're hearing all these phone conversations where he's like, oh, I'm in Spain now. And like, oh, I'm in England. And like, I'm on this big fancy work trip and I just miss you and I love you and I'll do anything for you.
To be honest, like, it sounded like other than him being like a serial cheater and lying prick, they actually were pretty compatible. He was really great with her daughter. He told her he didn't want to have children of his own, but he didn't care that she had a child.
But see, here's the thing about people like Scott Peterson is I feel like he is compatible with anyone because yeah. he can just be a chameleon. And like,
you're right.
Because it's the same with like Lacey. Like, they all thought that he wanted kids too and that they were going to build this nuclear family, when like in reality he like really despised that idea and was like not like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's why when Amber Fry is introduced to the world as his mistress, I think that's why Lacey's family quickly went from defending him to being like, fuck that dude.
So interestingly, a lot of people assume that the family stopped supporting Scott because of the affair, but actually the police had them come to the police station the day before the press conference. And they were like, hey, we're calling you, and we're also going to call the Petersons to let them know Scott's already aware. We're going to, you know, make an announcement tomorrow at the press conference that he has a mistress. And, you know, they shared some other evidence with the family, you know, stuff like he bought this secret boat in cash. He was looking up currents for the marine. Like, I don't know exactly what they shared with them, but Sharon Rocha said in her book, we didn't just assume because of the affair that he killed Lacey, it was other evidence they presented as well. And the people are like, oh, they supported him right up until that. Actually, they didn't. Sharon Rocha was really suspicious of him. She kept grilling him, like, you know, like, why didn't you find it suspicious that Lacey said she was going to be making gingerbread cookies and she was going to be, I forgot to mention, she was going to be marinating some bread thing, some gross thing people like to eat, French toast. That's it. And, she's like, why didn't you notice the house didn't smell like gingerbread cookies? Like, why didn't you notice these things? You know?
That's really interesting to me, especially because of like our theme this season, like talking about like what we perceive, or not, I guess they don't have to be black and white cases, but cases that have people divided due to like documentaries and podcasts and stuff like that. Because mm-hmm. the Hulu documentary paints it like the second they found out about the affair, the family was pissed and no longer trusted him, and like the narrative switched. So they don't mention any of that in the documentary.
No, I mean, Sharon Rocha, like the first half of her book is all about her like trying to like talking about these doubts she's having. She talked to like multiple people in her inner circle multiple times, like feeling really guilty that she's like, that's not the Scott I know, but this is really strange. Like, why did he have a secret boat? Why is he like changing his story? Why is he sleeping when we're all up worried? Like, there's all these things that just slowly added up. And then, I mean, it's just, I don't know, man. Like, I try not to be biased on this. Like, I can look at information and be like, okay, there's a chance that he didn't actually do this. Like, there's a chance, but it's like a shot in hell almost. Like, when you get down to all the evidence. But the problem is, people are like, where's the forensic evidence? It's like, people have been convicted of murder for hundreds of years without forensic evidence. Like, there's other evidence besides forensic evidence. And if you watch, there's a really great podcast, I forget what it's called, but they talk about how a lot of the forensic evidence isn't as sound as you think it is, including fingerprints and including DNA and including bite marks.
Yeah,
and
it's arson. Actually, yeah, people, we're really trying to move away from that unless it's absolutely conclusive. So like, you know, if someone's strangled and they find your fingernail clippings on their, you know, neck, then maybe it's a pretty good indication. But yeah, forensic evidence has actually been pretty debunked a little bit because of like a lot of wrongful arrests that happened because people were in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, sometimes the DNA will be like, well, it's like a 1 in 12 million match.
Right. Yeah.
Like, so like, there's like 33 million people in Texas.
I think that's a good like place to end it on, so that the next episode we can are you fucking kidding me right now? Every time I'm trying to be a professional like podcaster, you make these like, I want to start posting the videos of these faces that you're making at me.
You have no evidence, therefore because I can't be convicted.
Okay, I have evidence. I have literally video evidence of you making these faces right now.
I see.
Anyways, I think that's where we can conclude this episode. And then we'll start talking about, you know, the next episodes. We'll talk about when they found the body, how Scott tried to flee to Mexico, and then, of course, the trial and the theories that come along with everything. What?
I was going to say, there's a perfectly reasonable explanation on why he was found near the border.
Okay, well, that's going to be next episode. Because we actually do have a sign-off that we do, we just don't have a beginning opening statement, but our sign-off is usually Lindsay sings us off. So I'm going to go ahead and let you sing us off.
Okay.
A wingo whoop, a wingo whoop, a wingo whoop, a wingo whoop.
In Marina, the nice Marina, Scott Peterson's there now. Did you not think that was what I was going to do?
No, I didn't think. No, I really didn't.
I mean, the lyrics weren't great, but it, you know, I think it went with what we were talking about earlier somehow.
Yeah. All right. Goodbye, everyone. And thank you for listening.